Welcome to another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, a potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman. You know, Women's History Month is not going to go out with a whimper, but will continue to roar all year round, thanks in no small part to our special guest, Jane Anvik. And perhaps you've been listening to the ongoing tributes to this year's inductees for the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame on KSKA. Well, that's just one of the many projects that Jane has been one of the primary architects that have recognized and inspired the amazing women of Alaska. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you, Sandy. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah, well, maybe you would tell us a little bit more about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame, how it got started, and who some of the wonderful women were that have been recognized.
The Alaska Women's Hall of Fame was started 5 years ago when we were celebrating the 50th anniversary of statehood of Alaska. And different women's groups, such as the Zonta Club or the Women's Political Action or the YWCA, came together and said, how do we make sure that we weave women into the story of the celebration of the creation of Alaska? And they came up with the idea of creating a virtual Hall of Fame. So your listeners or anyone can go out to www.alaskawomenshalloffame.org, and there you will find the virtual Hall of Fame of 110 women from throughout Alaska who have made a difference in their community, made a difference in their profession, and they range from dog mushers to aviators to scientists to educators to politicians, in the women who have made significant contributions to the history of Alaska. The best part is that anyone listening to us this minute can nominate a woman who made a difference in their life or who they've encountered in their profession or through their own review of history. The only criteria is that she have made a contribution and she would have lived in Alaska at some point in her life. If she's living, she has to be at least 65 years of age. And we welcome anyone to go online and nominate a woman. And you can do that right now. And we'll be looking for who we were going to induct in March of next year. This past year, we inducted 15 people who are simply spectacular. Among the women that we inducted to the Women's Hall of Fame this particular year was Emily Morgan. Emily Morgan was a nurse who, at the time of the Iditarod we're celebrating right now, received the serum in Nome in 1925. She was the healthcare practitioner who actually saved the people in Nome with the serum, which she had to defrost before she could make sure that it was available for the people who were suffering from diphtheria in Nome. Emily Morgan did that in 1925. Another woman who was inducted this year is a person named Mary Joyce, who lived in near Kataku Glacier, which is outside of Juneau. And she, in 1935, wanted to make sure that people thought of Alaska as a destination that was for adventure. So she drove a dog team from Juneau to Fairbanks. It took her 3 months, and it was covered by the press. And along the way, she was carrying radio parts to all different people that were in communities along the way. But you can't easily get from Juneau to Fairbanks by any mode, let alone dog sled races. And Mary Joyce went on to actually put the beginning of the very first Iditarod with Joe Reddington in 1972. Mary Joyce was there for the beginning of the start of the Iditarod as one of the champion women who had ever participated in that activity. Another woman who was inducted into the Hall of Fame this year is a woman named Marie Nash. Marie Nash today lives in Anchorage, but when she was young, when she was born, she was born in a Japanese internment camp because her mother, who was from Ugashik on the Aleutian chain, and her Japanese-American father had been interned in a Japanese internment camp in California. So she, an Alaska native and the daughter of a Japanese-American person, was born in an internment camp, returned to Alaska, got very involved in her own Alaska Native Corporation and served on the board of directors of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation for many years, and then went on to work in public service. She was a chief executive officer for Senator Ted Stevens' office for 20 years and managed the intern program. So many of the people who are stars in Alaska today in a broad range of fields were high school kids that Marie Nash took care of when they were interns in the office of Senator Ted Stevens. So those are just some of the women and some of the stars that we introduced and inducted into the Hall of Fame this year.
Well, they would all make a wonderful movie.
I think there's a lot of material for movies. There's no question about it.
We're talking to Jane Anvik, and we're talking about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame.
And, of course, that's just this year's crop of amazing women. I know in the past, were some of the women your favorites from the last 4 years?
We have wonderful women who you would be very familiar with. Arla Sturgiluski, who served in the Alaska State Senate for 15 years with and has been very active in our community around the state. Or Rosita Wuerl, who has been an advocate of Tlingit culture and language throughout Alaska, but comes from Southeast. Or Esther Wanicki. Esther Wanicki was the first woman who served as the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources in the state of Alaska. And she was also the first woman in the United States who managed Minerals Management Services, the offshore oil and gas department of the United States of America through the Department of the Interior. There are five people who run offshore oil and gas operations, four in the lower 48 and one in Alaska. And Esther ran the first offshore oil and gas operation for the federal government, appointed by President Jimmy Carter for 4 years in the early 70s. Esther has had a fabulous influence on Alaska, having worked with something called the Alaska Federal Field Committee, which prepared all the materials for the advocacy on behalf of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And so what she has done her entire life is bring information to bear on major public policy issues, and then created an environment where, when times of conflict between development and environmental issues, she would make sure that there was a civil dialogue among people who were having a contentious discussion so that the public policy outcome was fair to all involved. Esther Wanicki is my hero, and she passed away on Tuesday of last week. So it's really important to me that she was honored as an inductee into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame and got to participate and receive that while she was living. And we are grateful for her participation in Alaska.
I'm glad we could make this special tribute to Esther today as well. And I wonder, did you discuss her views on the contemporary situation before she left us last week?
Oh, I talk to Esther regularly.
Right.
So
I was just curious. Yes.
On contemporary issues, her entire life had been devoted to making sure that there was a fairness to a discussion about what was going on in a public policy question. She was also a fabulous mentor of both young men and women. Mm-hmm. She taught three generations of Alaskan policymakers how to think about using information to guide your decision making and how to make sure that every voice was heard in the discussion.
Oh, how we wish that was more prevalent nationally right now. But, you know, did you work with her when you were implementing ANSA way back in the 70s too? Was that when you first met?
I met Esther because I was working for Governor Hammond in a thing called the Alaska Public Forum, where we were doing town meetings across the state on questions such as, shall we create a permanent fund or shall we allow offshore oil and gas development in Alaska? And Esther was running what was then the Federal Field Committee, and so she was the absolute fount of wisdom for, at that point I was quite young, and she was my teacher for how we would go about a discussion of a public policy question like that. Esther also served as the person who officiated at my wedding to Vic Fisher.
Oh.
So she was also the person who married me. So I'm very, very, very warm and close to Esther and her family.
How very, very special, Jane. And well, of course, we all know the wonderful Vic Fisher, the iconic Vic Fisher. And I'm remembering in his book, he was telling how you guys met. Did you have a different perspective than the one that's in the book?
Oh, no. I participated as I was there. My husband and I have been married for over 30 years, and we met at a public policy forum on what could we do to improve the quality of planning and development in the community of Anchorage. And we had a Humanities Forum grant to bring wonderful speakers from around the country up, and Vic seemed to have walked off with one of our speakers, and I had to retrieve the speaker to get back on the stage because Vic was off engaged in a conversation with him, which is how I met him.
And I guess in the book, you were a little mad at him at the moment, but
he stole my speaker. I was particularly irritated. I had a ballroom full of people ready to go on, and there was no one to be found, and he was off in the coffee shop with him.
Well, you know, it's wonderful how you've encouraged women to become part of the public life and to be a part of public policy. And I understand that you actually help train women when they want to campaign for office.
Yes, there's an organization in Anchorage called the Alaska Women for Political Action, and our goal is to get more women in elected public office. So we recruit and train women to seek and run for public office or to help women be able to be elected to office. And it turns out that there is a lot of skill sets needed for the process of getting elected is actually quite different than the process of serving. And so it turns out that in an election campaign like we're having right now for local government, you'll see 30-second television spots or a talk show where everybody gets 2 minutes to answer a question. And so you have to be pretty facile at being able to speak in those short pieces of information. Serving, however, requires really thoughtful deliberation about what you're doing, and those 30-second sound bites don't necessarily guide you in terms of how you do your job, but it also sets out maybe what the principles are or the values that you hold in trying to approach it. So we also support women who are in office, and that means assisting them with how they use information, how they include people in their conversations. So we don't just elect them and leave them. We elect them and continue our relationship with them through the Women's Political Action for their entire tenure in public office.
Jane Anvik is our guest today. You're listening to the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, and we're talking about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. And it's interesting you point out the skill sets for running for election are different from the skill sets required to do the job you're running for. I'm curious that if you feel that women in Alaskan politics have, as a group, been different in their work for government than males?
I think that women in public life in America and in Alaska bring another set of experiences to the discussion of a public policy point of view. And so I think there are differences among all the people who serve because of the experiences they bring. A fisherman brings a different set of experiences than an attorney or a journalist. However, there are some pretty fundamental elements to the lives of many women in our culture, in our country, that provide a different set of eyes than some of our male colleagues. And that has to do with if you took little kids and you gave them opportunities to do a project together, a psychologist would say, boys are going to compete with one another, and girls are going to create a collaborative environment where they could do something together. And that's a broad generalization. But I think it goes back to who we are as people who take care of babies versus people who are out slaying dragons.
I wonder if those generalizations are really true, because I think back over my own experience, and women are not less competitive than men in my experience.
I'm not saying less competitive. I am saying, generally speaking, they are going to be more cooperative towards seeking a solution than I'll just take all the marbles and go. And I'm not saying they're not competitive. I'm just saying that there is some research that suggests that there is some element of collaboration.
But if you're right, we need more women in Congress right now.
Our point of view is really quite simple, and that is that 50% of the population is female, and it would be really good if our elected representatives reflected that, and that would enrich the conversation for setting public policy.
Do you think there is a profound transformation going on right now in terms of gender participation and marriages and partnerships and everything else?
I do think that we have the opportunity, no matter what our situation is, to utilize all the resources of all the people in our communities. And so when we create opportunities where girls can learn how to be fully partners with both husbands and in work environments, then we create opportunities where we're using all the assets that we've got. So, for example, one of the other things that I do is work with Girl Scouts of Alaska. And what we're doing is creating girls of courage and character who change the world. So we're growing the next set of women who will be proactively engaged either in their communities or in their families or in the world.
Well, yes. And I love the idea of encouraging young girls to pursue more untraditional fields for women. That's changing too now.
Clearly, one of the things that the Girl Scouts is really engaged in is what we'll call STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, and math, in order to show girls that there are a wide variety of fields that they could get engaged in as they think about what kinds of work they want to do in their future. So one of the things that was reported on this station this past week was we have girls' robotics teams who compete for the statewide championship in robotics, where you actually program the computers and then you get the robots to do things. And they had the statewide competition a couple of weeks ago, and there were 7 all-girl Girl Scout teams out of a field of 100. And the Girl Scouts came in 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and 5th in the entire competition and are now going on to national competition as robotics champions who know how to program computers to make robots do things. And they are 8, 9, 10, and 11 years old.
Oh, that is so exciting.
They're learning how to handle us men at that young age.
Just the robot part.
Good point. And also, you were telling me earlier about this wonderful science fair that we offer to the young girls.
In the Girl Scouts program, we have what's called a Women in Science program, and we get the women who are engaged in a variety of science activities. So they could be road engineers, they could be the wildlife refuge managers, they could be dentists, they could be physicians, they could be the FBI teaching kids how to do swabbing of genetic matter from your mouth and then looking under the microscope to see what you can find. And they work with girls in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, Bethel, Dillingham, where they have a weekend where the women are doing workshops with girls about the different kinds of things that they do. What kinds of jobs do they have? And like the engineers were having kids develop structures out of marshmallows and toothpicks that actually had to bear 10 pounds of weight. And how do you do that? And what are the principles? Or the petroleum engineers had created cakes and puddings and pies, and you had to vertically put a straw through those materials and see what the subsurface was underneath those things, and they could examine it. And so the kids were learning all kinds of opportunities of ways that they could use the things that they learn in school in different kinds of jobs.
Yeah, expanding all kinds of visionary potential for their own lives, from decisions they might make.
Absolutely.
You know, I've come from the kind of age when you wanted to be a lawyer or a doctor, there was a quota in those schools. Only a certain amount of women were able to have that opportunity because the theory was, well, they're just going to get married and have children and not, you know, proceed in their careers. That attitude, I think, has changed.
Well, clearly, in the United Nations, they have ascertained that if you want to change the structure of a community, you educate women because they are the educators of their children. And if you can teach that generational activity, that really is the single largest effect for poverty in the third world, is teaching women how to read and how to be educated and use information.
And if we could eradicate poverty, I think we could be optimistic about the future for the entire planet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So in the Girl Scouts, we're basically training girls who are going to be, by the time they're 65, people who are going to be inducted into the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame. And all of our listeners can go to the AlaskaWomenHallOfFame.org website and read the bios of the 110 women who have been inducted and hear the stories of the heroes from our past who have made a difference.
Tell us more about that. Jane Anvik is here, and we're talking about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame on the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler. Jane, you said at the beginning of the program that someone who had a person in mind who they thought should be in the Hall of Fame could nominate that person.
Absolutely.
Exactly how is that done, and what sort of person would you be looking to have nominated?
Anyone can nominate a person.
But what is the nomination form about?
So you go online, and you click on Alaska Women's Hall of Fame, and it says nominate a woman. And up comes a questionnaire, and you type into the questionnaire right on the website, and that's how you do it. So they might say, what is her contribution for which you are honoring her? What is her background? What was her education? What was her work? What was her involvement in community? How did she interact with mentoring young women? Or young men? How did she mentor the young is really the question. Or how did she make a difference in her field? So there are artists like Rima Nyo who had made a significant contribution not only to artistic adventure, but she had instructed a variety of people in communities on how to capture, for example, the people when she went to Gamble and Savunga, how to capture the essence of those cultures in an artistic format. Or Lael Morgan, who was a journalist. And you would ask questions of Lael, and what she did was actually worked with the Tundra Times in the development of the story of the development of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and managed to, in a man's world, which was then journalism in the 60s, she was a reporter. And how did she do that, and how did she be able to affect the changes that occurred in the world?
Lael's one of my personal heroes.
And there's a woman named Nora Dauenauer from Southeast Alaska who has preserved the Tlingit language. And there's a tradition, an oratory in the Tlingit community where they didn't have fist fights. They had oratory competitions. And you would get the girl if you were the best talker. How about that?
I like that.
There are fabulous women. And so you could think of someone who you worked with on the stage, Dick, or you could think of someone that you had worked with in the development of Cyrano's and say, these people have made a difference in the cultural community of our lives. Or you could think of someone who taught at the university or taught drama. Or you could think of someone who had written the most fabulous play or novel and say, these have been contributions that are so significant that I think this woman should be honored for that activity.
And who takes that information and then decides?
The Alaska Women's Hall of Fame has a steering committee, and I'm on the steering committee, and we organize all the materials. We get anywhere from 60 to 100 nominations, and we give those to a committee of women who have previously been inducted. And so the people who are in the Hall of Fame serve as the judges of who should be the next class.
Passing the torch.
And so they read them all, and the criteria is who made a difference in her community or in the state, and they have an effort to be broadly representative of the entire state and all the cultures and communities of interest that exist here. So the nominations have to be in by November. Here we are in March talking about next year. The judges review all that stuff so that by next February, on the heels of Women's History Month, the nominations have been decided, and we have an induction ceremony at the end of February to celebrate Women's History Month.
But
you could do that today.
Yes.
You can go to the website, AlaskaWomen'sHallOfFame.org, and nominate someone who inspires you.
And also, if you're a history buff, there might be somebody who is in our history but not fully recognized because they've been sort of lost in the mists of times. I'm thinking of Lena Mora Lewis right now.
Yes, Lena Mora Lewis was inducted into the Hall of Fame
right. As
the woman who was the subject of a play that you put on.
Ayesha Jones, a woman playwright, wrote that.
And she was one of the first people who ran for president of the United States as a...
No. Alaska Territory, and she ran against Wickersham and almost beat him.
Oh, terrific. Terrific.
And she was a socialist organizer in the state of Alaska, which at that time had a lot of followers.
Absolutely. You can also nominate people who have passed. So, for example, this last year we did Dr. Leonie Mouskern-Zesch, who was a dentist in the 1920s. And she was a traveling dentist throughout Northwest Alaska, a woman dentist. She was the only dentist in Alaska. I mean, the only woman dentist in Alaska, but one of the few women dentists in the country. Or other people who had previously served. I mean, Susan Butcher has passed, but as the four-time champion of the Iditarod, has been inducted into the Women's Hall of Fame. So the women can be from our past, or they can be people who are right up with us, among us today.
And you know, Alaska's always been very progressive as far as women's concerned. Our vote came earlier than the national vote. Isn't that not right?
The very first act of the first territorial legislature in 1913 was to enfranchise women, to give them the vote. And that was 7 years before the United States of America gave women the vote.
Was this sort of thing what attracted you to Alaska, Jane? And you know, that because it was a very progressive state full of opportunity for women in particular?
Like many others, I came to visit a friend. And I came to visit my sister, and I fell in love with Alaska and stayed. And so that was almost 40 years ago. And so I would say what is wonderful about Alaska today, Eve, as well as 40 years ago or 100 years ago, is I do think that it's all hands on deck. And so there, some of the barriers that women may have encountered in the lower 48 were not apparent here, because we needed everybody's skills and capacities to be able to move the ball forward. And I think that's still the case here in Alaska.
Yeah, and you know, Alaska, well, I guess we have to wind up, but I just want to say Alaska, it has ways of honoring our women besides the Women's Hall of Fame, like the Athena, the YW Notable Women. And that's because we have so many wonderful women, including you, Jane Anvik.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for being our guest today and sharing about the Alaska Women's Hall of Fame and also the emerging generation of Girl Scouts.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you, and join us again next month for another edition of the Alaska Radio Reader Ramblers.